Hey everyone, welcome to Podcast Insider. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Mike Dell. I had to think there for my think of what my name was, Mike.
Yeah, well, you know, that happens when you're on a podcast so often. So
if I don't get the name of the show right, I get my name wrong. It's hilarious. Yep. But hey everyone, welcome. And we got a great show lined up for you tonight. Lots of topics. And we've all been going through a bunch of computer upgrades, so it looks like everything's working on your side, Mike.
Yeah, that's good. I swear, every time I try to fire something up, it needs an update.
Yeah. And yesterday I was fighting hardware issues, so it's, you know, it's the season, I think. Yeah. But we got a great show lined up for you. We've got some news, and then beyond that, we've got a best practice. We've got some blueberry news, and then we got a double whammy today. We've got a blueberry pro tip and an interview.
Yes.
And then a question of the week, and then, of course, our wrap-up. So, Dan Bongino.
Yes, he's the does talk radio and podcasting. Started in, I don't know, the CIA or something. Anyway, very popular guy these days. He is basically flipping off YouTube, it says here in the article, and says my show will no longer be there on YouTube. So all the ones that are there now will stay there, but he's just not going to participate anymore.
Yeah, he's had some censorship over there.
Yeah,
and
he's like, fine, I don't need you.
So he's going to leave, and I think there's a lot of creators that are starting to, you know, see some of this happening at YouTube. All you have to do is just say one thing they don't like, and, you know, they start taking videos down, and it just goes to show you the value. And, you know, if someone that knows Dan Bongino is listening, you know, what he should do is have his video part of his podcast or his content as an actual podcast.
Right. Well, in this case, he's going to Rumble, and he's an investor in Rumble.
Yeah, so. He's an investor over there. So maybe a little commercial play, Try to get some news, drive some traffic. That could be as well. So
yeah, well, Rumble seems to be the competitor to YouTube for people that get censored off of YouTube.
Yeah. Well, there's big changes over at Radiolab.
Yes. Yeah, Jad Abumrad, I can never pronounce his name right, but anyway, he's stepping down as the host. His partner, Robert Krolwich, retired a few years ago, and so the original Radiolab is no more, really. I mean, they'll still continue, but...
I wonder who's... have they picked a replacement for it, or...?
Yeah, all I have here is a tweet by Jad, so I don't know what their plans are with the show. But He started at No2, and so, you know, 20 years. And, you know, it was a radio show before it was a podcast. So
right.
That's why it started No2.
Yeah. And it's been a pretty popular podcast for many, many years. So,
yeah, I enjoy it. You want to talk about, you know, I don't know if it's not necessarily wall of sound, but the sound design on that show is top notch. They don't want any silence anywhere.
Really?
It's interesting. You know, I can't imagine how much time it takes to do that, but it is cool to listen to.
Awesome. Well, Timber, a podcast hosting company, is shutting down, according to Podcasting Sucks Tanner Campbell. Yeah. Timber.fm. Podcasting Sucks is a podcast that Tanner does.
Yeah, and Tanner famously was the guy that was saying he wanted to put all his eggs in Spotify's basket.
That's right, thinking that Spotify was going to pay him for his podcast being over there. Well,
what's funny is he's on Timber, apparently, because the only reason he announced it is he's telling everybody that he's changing hosts.
Mm.
So... Well. You know, but Timber, you know, you go to their website and there's no mention of it. So you
right.
can still do a trial, a free trial and all this. So we'll see. Apparently they emailed everybody that were customers over there.
Yep. So. Well, Spotify has removed Neil Young's music at his request. Of course, Twitter is full of threads talking about other extremely popular artists on Spotify. to take the same action, hopes that Spotify will take it more seriously in regards to Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Well, Joe will be back on podcasts in not too distant future, I'm guessing.
You know, here's the thing. If a bunch of artists, and I don't know if they will, you know, they care about free speech just as much as anyone else does. Well,
some of them do, obviously.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone else jumps on this bandwagon. And if they do, if a Taylor Swift or a Billie Eilish or someone like that was popular, really popular, said, remove my stuff or take Joe out. You just wonder who makes the most revenue.
Right. Well, we'll find out at some point. I'm sure.
That's right. You know, and again, you know, as I asked my co-host over on the other show yesterday, I said, you guys been in talks with Joe? Is he, warming the engines up to come back?
From what I understand, he never got rid of that account over there. So
No, he just took stuff offline. So we'll see.
One side note, it's not very often that we get to reference an article on Rolling Stone.
Yeah, it's interesting. A study says 30 seconds is the best length for an ad. Okay, well.
But they asked radio people. That's the funny thing. And it's not Acast, it's Odyssey, was asking, you know, did this survey, and they asked just radio people, mm-hmm. radio listeners. Well, you know, what do I care? Perfect length for an ad is zero as far as I'm concerned.
I think, though, what happens is real ads that have been baked, in other words, been mm-hmm. produced by a Ford or a Geico or someone like that, they can hit that 30-second mark, bada-bing, bada-boom. When someone's doing a host-read, host-endorsed ad, there's usually more to it than just the sell, you know? There's more discussion. So I wouldn't say a 30-second ad is the best link for a podcast ad. I can't do my GoDaddy ad in 30 seconds.
No, and you know, you look at people like Leo Laporte, who, you know, pretty much, you know, the host-read ad is his thing, and, you know, he'll go 2, 3, 4 minutes sometimes.
Yeah.
But he makes them entertaining as part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just, you know, buy this. It's
right.
You know, here, this is why it's cool and blah, 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 blah.
And it's usually pretty much integrated as well. Yeah. So, well, Pot in Box launches a monetization feature. So I haven't looked at this.
Yeah. Pot in Box is basically a podcast voicemail service, and they've added monetization. So, you know, kind of like Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee or something like that. Mm. So not only can people leave feedback, they can leave you a tip. So
my recommendation is that you, if you want to make some extra money for your podcast, you need to set up a Lightning and do Satoshis podcast 2.0. So
right.
we ought to enable that here on this show. We should do that. But
yeah, we should.
Yeah. You know, best practice here. What did you come up with this week?
Oh, that was Mackenzie's doing. So we'll have to just read through it together here. But she suggests that you be picky about what you choose to advertise on your podcast. And I think what she's getting at is, you know, sometimes there are particular companies out there that may alienate your show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know of any of those, really. The thing is, though, is you should always be picky about your show. You should, you know, when you advertise, you should advertise something that you believe in personally, or it's, you know, it's disingenuous, I guess. You know, podcasters have, you know, most indies anyway, have a relationship with their listeners.
I think there's two ways to look at it, too. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a host-endorsed ad, you're basically endorsing and repping that product.
Yeah, of course.
So from that perspective, I think you have to be very careful. But when it comes to programmatic advertising, where it just, you know, basically people are buying ads on the fly, and you may end up with a ad from a university, or you may have both a public service announcement, or you may, you know, you can deselect some categories of content, but oftentimes, depending on programmatic, you just get what you get.
Right.
And you won't even know unless a listener tells you.
Right. And a lot of, you know, most of the time, those things are getting way better. You know, I notice, you know, when we were testing one for you on your geek show there, you know, those ads were pretty relevant to me when I was listening to it here. So,
yeah. And it was, some of those were actually local to me as well. Yeah. So because of the geo targeting. So yeah, I think if you're going to pick an advertiser, pick a product, pick the service, you know, and just make sure it's got, here's the key. It's got to pass the yuck factor.
Yeah.
if you kind of have like hear about it and read about it and you go, you know, you're kind of having that hesitation. Yeah, that's probably not the advertiser for your show.
Right. But yeah, the one thing, you know, around here is advertise, you know, anybody that's picking up Remnant ads are getting casino ads.
Yep.
You know, and some people, that's just not relevant. And it might even piss off some people.
Yeah. But usually those are targeted. And I hear plenty of casino ads all over the place. So, but I think there's a casino in every state now with the things have changed. But yeah, that is interesting. And I don't know if that would necessarily alienate someone, but depends on the type of show, I guess.
Sure. You know, like, you know, you don't want your church sermon podcast to have ads for bars and stuff like that in there. You never know. Yeah, but
probably true. Blueberry News, we've got a blog post up, newsletter for podcasters. And I think this is something that's pretty important about what to have on your website and how to form and how to do requests to get listeners on your newsletter.
Yep. Yeah. Newsletters for, you do one, you know, it's basically your show notes for your show. And we don't send anything out particularly for this show, but, you know, it's a good thing to do, especially, you know, if you're trying to build community, because you'll get some feedback and you'll get, you know, but anyway, Mackenzie actually wrote that article.
Nice.
We're on Podcast Insider.
All right. So our Blueberry newsletter is going out today. So check your inbox, lots of juicy stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And of course, our first event of the year is coming up. It's Podcast Movement Evolutions. It's in March. And it's out in Los Angeles, and we've got a discount code. You can use Blueberry 50 without the E's to get $50 off your ticket. So if you're thinking about going out to Podcast Evolutions in Los Angeles, you need to start looking at that. It's less than 2 months away, and we'd love to see you out there with us.
Yep, we've been planning all our events for this spring, and I think we got a lot of that nailed down, which is good.
Yes. Yes, we do. All right. So we got a blueberry pro tip. Yep. And this one is entitled Stop Strong, which is interesting. So let's go ahead and roll that.
Hi, it's Toby Goodman here. The term pod fade is pretty much regarded as a negative one. It happens for a number of reasons, including when you can't keep up with production or you lose interest. Either way, as I understand it, it's when a podcast stops without an official announcement. To me, it's always felt like the podcast equivalent of someone who slips out of a party hoping to go unnoticed. I get it. Long goodbyes are always painful. So, what if your podcast isn't doing it for you anymore? I've worked with a number of podcasters who have felt like this. Sometimes it's just a confidence dip, but other times it can be something deeper. Perhaps the positioning or the setup feels too constrained or that it's run its course. If that is the case, stopping your podcast might be the right thing to do. But what if you still really enjoy being a podcaster? Should you carry on or create a new show? If you do the latter, will you lose listeners and the traction you've built up over the months or even years you've been podcasting? Well, if you do it badly, the bad news is yes. But if you're listening to this show, I'm going to assume you're not a fan of doing anything badly. My tip today is, if you're going to stop for good or change direction, don't hide from it. Do these things with intent, because it demonstrates strength of character. I find myself often saying to clients that it's okay to change your mind about something. People aren't owed an explanation. But your listeners will appreciate and respect you if you tell them, because after all, these aren't just people. They are, to some extent, your people. I don't know if you should stop or restart your show, but if you're in the business of creating a professional impression using your podcast, get in touch. Rebranding a show or starting a new one comes with a number of podcast-specific quirks we are no strangers to. So if this has struck a chord for you, head on over to blueberrypro.com and discover more about how we can help you.
That was awesome.
It kind of goes along with that article I wrote a few weeks ago about stopping a show. And, yeah, you don't want to just pull the plug and disappear if you're planning on sticking around in some other way.
That's right.
But, I know we've all started and stopped shows. I know I have. I'm probably the king of that.
Well, we've got an interview this week, too. This is our podcaster of the month. And those of you that are watching live, you're not going to get to see this or hear this. But those of you that are subscribed to the show will. But anyway, we're going to kick to the interview here. Podcaster of the Month, Landis Wade. This is I think this is one of the better interviews I've done for Podcast Insider and truly deserving of Podcaster of the Month. Here we go. Everyone, I want to welcome Landis Wade to the Podcast Insider. Landis has been podcasting with Blueberry for about 3 or 4 years now, and we'll get into his story. But Landis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Todd, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you are our January Podcaster of the Month. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm wondering where I get my free parking space if that comes with the Podcaster of the Month. But that's a great honor. I really do appreciate that. I started with Blueberry about 3 years ago when I got this idea to start a podcast. I was a practicing lawyer for 35 years, trial lawyer, and so I knew how to ask questions. And I was kind of phasing out or getting burned out or whatever you want to say about that experience and wanted to try something creative in my 60s. And I thought, well, I know, I'm going to do something I know nothing about. I'm going to go start a podcast. And so I talked to a couple of people who were doing it and asked them some questions, and they turned me on to Blueberry. And I can talk more about that and how y'all have helped me along the way. But essentially, I kind of wanted to do something in a space that wasn't happening because in addition to turning into a podcaster from being a lawyer, I turned into an author. And because radio has gotten to be, it used to be years ago, you'd hear a lot of book reviews on radio. You'd even see in the newspapers. You don't see that much anymore. And I thought, well, maybe I can help, give authors sort of a platform through this thing called podcasting and have some fun along the way and learn some stuff. And so that's kind of how I got into it originally. My dad asked me, said, Landis, you're not going to practice law. You're going to start a podcast. How do you make money at that? I said, well, Dad, that's not really the goal here right now. And he just kind of looked at me like I was crazy.
Well, after being a trial lawyer for all those years, hopefully you build up a little nest egg and have some room to breathe. But I tell you what, my mom was a circuit court clerk for many, many years. And at least here in Michigan, circuit court has some of the nastiest stuff that you would ever imagine come through it. And she just couldn't do it no more. And she has been out of the circuit court business for more than 20 years, but that kind of sounds like it kind of wore on you too.
Yeah. I mean, it did, 35 years and things changed over time. I mean, it used to be more like this exciting, I'm going to be Rumpole of the Bailey and go, do something fantastic in court. And then over time it became too expensive to actually take a risk to go to trial because it was so costly to do that. So a lot of cases settle. So very few cases actually get to a jury trial anymore. And that's where all the action and the fun is. And so I thought, well, yeah, I'm going to try to create some action, in another way. And I'll try to do that, in the podcast world, the writing world, because when I write books, I can control the outcome, right?
That's right.
I can't control the outcome in a courtroom.
One thing that is interesting here is your transition from being a trial lawyer to writing books and now having, 275 episodes under your belt?
Yeah, it's amazing to me. When COVID hit, it was kind of a blessing in disguise. I hate to find blessings in COVID, but I mean, you know, some things happen that way. I was doing all my interviews locally in a studio here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And when COVID hit, I had to figure out, what am I going to do? And so I went online and figured out how to use an online platform. And I started, because I had time on my hands, doing two episodes a week instead of one episode a week, just started putting out more content. And suddenly it kind of went, you know, beyond North Carolina. I've recorded episodes in 28 states and three countries. And, you know, I wouldn't have met all those people unless I'd actually been forced, kind of pushed outside, you know, my comfort zone of being in somebody's presence. Right now, you and I are looking at each other over the internet. You're up in cold, or what'd you say, Michigan? I'm down here in North Carolina. But, you know, the magic of that is something that I hadn't really thought through when I first started the podcast. I still do audio only. I haven't gone to a video format yet. I like the audio component of it. But yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes circumstances force you to do things. Now, you know, I wasn't forced out of the law firm, like the character in my book that I just wrote, but I kind of brought that on myself by saying, I'm going to go do this thing called podcasting. And all my lawyer friends looked at me like I was crazy, like my dad did. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, when we're getting into our act three and we're going to try new things, you don't have to wait till act three, by the way, you can start earlier. Why not take a risk? Why not try something? I mean, look, the worst thing can happen is maybe you don't get as many listeners. Maybe they don't like it. Maybe they call you up and tell you, like one person did who knows poetry better than I do. When I asked a poet one time what their poem meant, they said, Landis, you just don't do that. And I said, well, why not? I didn't know what they meant. I thought I better ask them, right? I mean, this is what a podcast is for. You ask questions. So anyway, it's been a fun experience to try to learn something new. I mean, test the brain, right? Try something new. And we might talk more about, you know, goals related to podcasting, all those things. But anyway, for me, it was really just sort of that initial challenge, taking a little bit about what I'd learned in the courtroom, instead of being a cross-examiner, being more of a direct examiner, asking the kind of questions where I can get out of the way and the guests can shine.
You know, a lot of podcasters make that mistake where they never get out of their own way. They keep talking. They'd ask the question and then almost answer the question for them. So I think, you know, probably lawyers are very attuned to listening carefully. Okay, because it's all in the details, really. It's how someone shapes an answer that you say, well, there's more there or maybe not. So yeah. I think it probably well attuned. I did laugh though. And I'm going to share this with Barry, our legal counsel. And Barry, you know, one of the smartest things I ever did when I formed this company was I got a lawyer on the team and I made him one of the owners. So it was a brilliant move, but you know, you wrote in your notes to me, did you hear the one about the lawyer who walked into a podcast studio? He'll chuckle about that because he's got his own podcast studio as well. But right. But so the genesis is an interesting and every time we have these interviews, I'm always intrigued by what made someone decide to do a podcast. So yours was pretty straightforward, and yet I do have a question. And I guess I'll do this in reverse order. Normally, what I do, what are you now getting out of the podcast? How is that feeding your brain? Keeping you excited. What's coming to you now through these interviews that you, is it ideas for books or whatever?
Yeah. So this might ring true for the podcasters listening, but you know, essentially podcasting is all about community, right? You're having conversations, you're talking. Mine is an interview based podcast, and there are lots out there that are not, that just people get on and talk to themselves or to their audience. And that's another format. But for me, being in an interview-based podcast gives me the chance to interact with another human being about a topic that I enjoy. In this case, it's books and writing. And so when I started out, you know, I've written kind of three novella-length books in my last year as a lawyer, but I hadn't really deep into the writing craft. I'd taken some courses, I've done different things. I thought about maybe going to get an MFA, and I thought, no, I don't have time. I'm in my 60s. Every day counts, right? So I'm going to go out and interview people that know a lot more about writing than I do. I'm going to learn. I'm going to read their stories, read their books, learn, you know, have a good time doing it, be entertained. But I'm also going to have the chance to ask them how they did that. You know, Why did they choose that point of view? How did they come up with their theme? How did they pick their characters? What are they, how did they get the character name? All this stuff. And so you asked me what I'm getting out of this. Well, 3 years later, after releasing 275 episodes and basically promoting other authors throughout that whole time, you know, I've got a full-length novel coming out in the spring, and a lot of these authors are supporting me now. You know, they're going to actually, you know, they blurb my book. They're going to write reviews for the book. They might pre-order my book. And, you know, and it's a good thing, too, that I waited 3 years, because having done that, I learned a whole lot more about how to write a novel than if I'd have just gone into my fourth book after, you know, I'll call it graduating from the law. You know, it just made me a better writer. And in the process, I've built a community of friends in the writing community, all the way from, you know, independently published authors to New York Times bestsellers who've appeared on the show. And it's like anything else. You know, you do something for somebody else, which I've been doing, promoting their book. They're going to do something nice for you at some time. And it's all part of a community. I would call the writing community and the podcasting community, you know, very close community. We're not in competition with each other. There are enough readers out there, enough listeners out there, you know, and so it's kind of the same, you know, karma.
You know, when I was approached in 2004 to write the first book on podcasting, I was, how should we say it? I destroy the English language enough when I speak it, let alone when I write it. So when Wiley came to me, my response to them was really kind of vulgar. It was like, you got to be beeping kidding me, you know? And they came back, said, no, we're not. And he said, don't get scared of this thing. I said, you're writing a technical book. So write the outline and the book will write itself. And it did. It quite did. You know, that outline was the key. So it's a big difference than I kind of had subjects I had to cover. So it was like writing a textbook. It wasn't like writing a story. Two different, completely different writing styles, obviously. And I had a tech review writer and, you know, an editor. And yeah, you know, I was lucky enough. I actually got paid money in advance. You know, no one gets advance anymore. I got paid in advance to write this book and did very well with it. But I, to be honest with you, I would have absolutely zero desire to write a novel. I might like write my own biography someday, but I think that it takes a certain mindset to write a novel and come up with the concepts and ideas. I'm an avid reader. I read a lot of different sci-fi type of books. It always amazes me how, you know, 9 books in, I'm thinking, how did this individual figure this, you know, how did he get this series to 9 books or 10 or 11 or wherever he's at? Takes a vivid imagination. So I could see where you doing these interviews would, you know, take those nuggets away from each show and say, wow, I'm going to apply that when I write my next book. So that's remarkable. You accomplished something. Did you think that was going to be the end result, or did you find that out?
I wasn't sure exactly what the path would be when I started. I did realize I was learning some things, and you know, the way that it's developed, this novel I've got coming out, and by the way, the secret to writing is magic. you know, you're at the keyboard and you're writing and you're doing something terrible on the page, and something from somewhere this great idea comes. I don't know where it comes from, but it's magic anyway. So anyway, I'm doing this podcast, and I don't know, I was on about episode 170, and I interview this nonfiction author. Like I might have, you know, I've interviewed somebody who does our local network about, he wrote a little podcasting book too. I did that. But this author wrote a nonfiction book about the historic Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence right here in Charlotte where I live. I'd never really heard of it. And I thought, I need to dig deeper into that. And we talked a lot about it. There were a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding the Mec Dec. Supposedly, it was signed 1 year before Thomas Jefferson got around to it in Philadelphia. And the language of the two documents is very similar, raising the question, did Jefferson copy, you know, from the Mec Dec? So all of a sudden I'm getting, you know, and I turned to the guy and said, are you going to write this novel? He goes, no, you should write the novel. And I said, well, if I write it, will you give me some feedback? And he said, sure. And so I was working on something else and I totally changed the plot.
Wow.
I went back and kind of started working on the Mec Dec. And once I had that, and realized that with my legal background, I could make it kind of a legal thriller too, because we ended up putting the Mec Dec on trial in my novel that's called Deadly Declarations. It started to come together. Now, I couldn't write as fast as I did when I was practicing law, because then I only had 2 things to do. I was a lawyer by day and a writer by night. when you're a podcaster, you're spread a little more thin than that. You know, you're always working toward the next interview. You're doing lots of things outside interview process. So I took my time and I wrote and I did it the right way. And the other things I learned from these authors was, don't put your book out right when it's ready to come out. That is, when you finish it, you got to put about 7 months in there to promote it.
Wow.
And get it ready to come out. And so I've been patient. The book's, you know, been finished. The publisher had it ready since October, but, you know, we're going to release it in April. And that was a valid piece of information to learn, because there's a lot to do before, you know, before a book launch.
You know, I was about 7 chapters into 11 chapter book writing project with that first book, and someone called me to interview me, and they was asking a bunch of questions about podcasting, and we went on and on. I said, well, you know, what are you doing all this information? He said, well, I'm writing a book. And I'm thinking, I'm under NDA. I can't say I'm writing a book, right? And I'm like, oh, interesting. So when's your publishing date? And he told me, and it was before mine. So the next call I made was to my editor, said, hey, by the way, he says, can you be done in 2 weeks? And I'm like, 2 weeks? So I had to rush to finish. So actually, in my book, the last couple of chapters are a little thin, because we had to rush to get to, because they actually printed copies, and it turned out to be the best move we ever made. That book ended up doing 45,000 copies. So it,
that's great. But, but you know, with as many podcasts there are out there today, I'm sure that there's availability in the market for more than one book on podcasting.
But but it was the first, so that was the main. It was in the early days.
Early days, because now everybody brings up perspective where they talk about different techniques and marketing strategies, that kind of thing.
And everything's on the internet now, so maybe you really don't even need a book, but the books make good guides.
No, we need Todd's book. That's what we need. Go ahead and get Todd's book, right?
Yeah, it's pretty dated. It was before Apple was even involved in podcasting, so that's kind of funny.
Okay.
So let me ask a follow-up question here. Then from these interviews, what are the feedback you're getting from your audience? Are they having the same takeaways?
Yeah, so essentially what I've had to learn over time is that there are really two types of listeners. One is just a reader that loves books, and the other is an author who reads and writes, because you really can't be an author if you don't read well. And so I've had to actually over time think about, you know, what I'm doing for my listeners, because, you know, sometimes the readers are less interested in some of the more technical questions I might ask about writing. And I've also had to think about it, what I do on my Patreon channel, because I have a Patreon channel where, you know, for the first couple of years here, I've been doing exclusive episodes for people that support the podcast on tips related to the craft and business of writing. I just had a revelation the other day, which was, Landis, this is Charlotte Reader's podcast. You need to start doing some more things for readers. And so we're going to start some Patreon episodes where the authors actually talk about what they've been reading, reading recommendations, and these types of things. But Todd, I'm not that smart, so it took me a while to figure this out, right? I mean, over time, you learn these things as you go. And because I've got a website and I've got social media outlets, you know, I'm also learning that I need to engage with the people that are listening to the show through the social media channels. And I wasn't really a big social media person, didn't have time for it. So, you know, one of the advices I give to people is, if you don't have time to do certain things or you don't like it as much, hire out. So I've got a good social media team that helps me. And I still engage, but I use them a lot to help me with those kinds of things so that we can be engaging, you know, with the listeners on the show. And I'm just frankly grateful for all the people that decide, you know, to tune in and listen. I mean, I could talk to these folks and it'd be fine, but it's also nice to know that people are listening.
Yeah, it is. And I think from my perspective, having been in this space for so long, I can really easily get scope locked and, you know, fall down a rabbit hole and not really pay attention to what's going on. So oftentimes I try to do as much time as I can seeing what is going on, other podcasts, other shows are talking about podcasting, other techniques, just because you don't want to be that old dog. You know, you don't want to be, you want to be that person that's still evolving. And I think that's the beauty about podcasting, is you can evolve on any, almost any topic.
Exactly. I was listening on the drive back today from Durham to Charlotte, another podcaster I know who does something similar to what I do, but has her own way of doing it. And I was listening to it, I thought that was really good questions, you know, to ask that author. I think I'm going to try to remember to do that. So you can learn things from other podcasters when you listen to podcasts that are very helpful. And I've been learning, you know, along the way, and Blueberry's been a good outlet for that because you've got a newsletter, you've got information. We connect with other podcasters, find out what's going on with them. And I'm going to put in a plug now because I really enjoyed the ease with which the plugin PowerPress has worked on my website. I'm not a technical guy. You know, I used to have to ask my IT people to come help me change my password when I was a lawyer. Now, what am I doing? I'm running a podcast and I'm putting stuff in the back office. And Blueberry made it very easy, you know, for me to do that, to add my episodes and know that it's just going to go out there. Again, magic, right? It's just going to magically go out there to all the platforms. At least that's the way I see it, because I'm not sure how it works. But that's been a big help to me, you know, in setting it up. And, you know, Todd, everybody doesn't have to have a website, right? You don't have to do that to be a podcaster. You can go much thinner on that. But I've liked it because it gives the authors who've been on the show a place to go back to and link to their websites and allow people to actually find them, find an interview about them, and maybe help them sell their book.
If I haven't said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. A website is basically your discovery engine. You know, it gives Google mm-hmm. something to chew on and drive right. people there that may not find you otherwise. And it's your own piece of property. It's your own, you know, you build your own castle there. Well, I tell you what, it sounds exciting. I'm definitely going to tune in. I'm an avid reader myself, and it's always interesting to hear different perspectives. So CharlotteReadersPodcast.com is your website. And Landis, your personal website is LandisWade.com. But I guess if they want to find a podcast, they go over CharlotteReadersPodcast.com. Again, 275 episodes to sink your teeth in there. And, you know, I'm going to kind of straight up too. That's a major accomplishment, is to get to 275. And as short a time as you've been doing this, I would say congratulations and thank you for, you know, your plug on us. We definitely appreciate it. And I'm glad my team was able to help you or whatever interaction you may or may not had with them. But definitely appreciate it. What's probably the best way for them to get to is go to the website.
Yeah, that's great. You can find it your way there at CharlotteReadersPodcast.com and at LandisWade.com. We've kind of cross-purposed those two. And, I have a guest list on the website. I've got the recent 6 episodes on the homepage. I have a community blog there. I have a blog there. We're doing lots of different, you know, people can submit to be on the podcast there. I don't discriminate. You can be a New York Times bestseller. You can be having your first book out and you can submit. And so, yeah, I want to thank you, Todd, thank Blueberry for having me on your podcast. And because I know there's preparation and time and all that, I really appreciate it.
And make sure everyone gets on the pre-order for Deadly Declarations, an Indie Retirement Mystery by Landis Wade, which is going to be available in April. So there's my plug back to you.
Hey, thank you. Hey, appreciate that.
And thank you for being on. And again, much success to your podcast.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Todd.
All right. And I want to thank Landis for taking time and having, spend some time with me, talk about his show and his genesis moment of starting his podcast and then what he has gotten out of it, what his audience has gotten out of it. It's pretty remarkable. It's a very interesting story. Question of the week.
Yeah, I picked this one up on Facebook this morning and thought it was a good one. We haven't talked about microphones in a long time, but question is, thinking about buying a new microphone, curious, what aspects do you consider before buying one? So basically, my answer would be, you know, there's a few things you got to think about. Definitely your recording environment. If you're going to be in a somewhat noisy, bouncy room, you don't want a, Neumann condenser microphone that'll pick up a fly fart down the block.
Right.
You know, but, if you're recording in a closet full of, clothes hanging everywhere, you could probably get away with something like that. Also your voice. I mean, you know, not everybody sounds good on a SM7B.
And my voice does not sound good on a Heil PR40.
Right. You know, that was the mic du jour here a couple years ago.
And I think it's true, though. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid. If you get a mic, Let's say you didn't get to try one, and you buy one off Amazon, or you buy it from B&H, or whoever mm-hmm. you buy from. Make sure there's a return policy for the microphone.
Yeah.
Because if you, I have a desert of mics in a room over here, because some of them were given to me, gifted through trials. And I'll be honest with you, some of them just did not. They were a solid mic, but for my voice, no.
Oh yeah, I've got a PR40 sitting over on my ham desk. Works good for that.
Sure.
And I've got a drawer full of various microphones. But yeah, definitely a return policy is a good thing. It took me 2 or 3 tries to get this one. I'm using the RE20. You know, which is, you know, you walk into most radio stations, you're either going to see what Todd's got, the SM7, or you're going to see one of these. That's kind of the two broadcast standard mics.
And you know, for years, I used a condenser mic, and then, recently switched, and I love the sound of both. Matter of fact, I love the sound of a condenser mic better than a dynamic mic. It's just got more range. At a certain point, you get tired of having to be careful of not banging the table, or because with a condenser mic, stuff comes through so easy. So you have to get, and of course, then again, cost. What is the cost?
You can spend anywhere from $50 to $2,000,
right?
You know, on a microphone, and you're not going to sound $2,000 better on the $2,000 microphone.
Nope. If you have a $2,000 microphone, you need to have a $15,000 audio path through it to take advantage of that $2,000 microphone. Right. But most folks now are probably just buying USB mics. I would assume that is the majority. Then, of course, some that are going the XLR route. Yep. And for those of you that don't know what an XLR mic is, most USB mics come with both USB and XLR.
Yep.
And XLR is a 3-prong connector that goes into a mixer.
Yeah, mainly a mixer, a Rodecaster, anything like that, or a USB interface. Because a lot of people will buy a nice XLR mic like what I've got here or what you've got, which doesn't have USB, but then they can get an adapter to put it in USB, and that works in most cases. That SM7 needs a lot of horsepower.
It does. This is a power-hungry mic, and you have to have a really good preamp or a lifter that's in front of this that helps get the volume up. So, just be prepared. If you're going to pick a mic, if you don't like it, send it back, and then make sure the one you get, you've got the proper equipment to run with it too.
Yeah, and like I said, for ease of use, dynamic USB mic is what a lot of people go with, and that's usually enough.
Yep. Especially if you're solo, if you're running an interview show though, where there's two of you in the same room, the USB can get tricky because sometimes the computers won't recognize both mics. But
you get something like a mixer, Rodecaster, or whatever, or there's those little Zoom ones that are like 4 ports or whatever, and You can make that work.
Yep. Generally speaking, though, dynamic microphones are more likely to work for most podcasters, Mike said, and I agree. So there you go. There's our question of the week and our response. What are your thoughts? Do you have a question you'd like us to answer on the show? If you do, drop an email to mike@blueberry.com, blueberry without the E's, audio, text, or video, and we may use it. As always, the best place for support with any Blueberry product service is our ticket system at blueberry.com/support. Tickets give the whole team access rather than direct email or calls. Of course, this week we've been coming to you from the new media studio in Coldwater, Michigan, Mike Dell's World Studio in Traverse City, Michigan. And of course, this show is produced by the Blueberry Pro production team at blueberrypro.com. You can always schedule one-on-one with me, hosting customers only. Email todd@blueberry.com. You can schedule a tech checkup with Mike, hosting customers only. Email mike@blueberry.com. Of course, as always, you can send us a podcast sticker and a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll send you a Blueberry Care package. Our mailing address is on the website at podcastinsider.com.
Sounds like you've done that before.
Yeah, and I'm reading from the paper script that you provided me, or the digital script.
There we go. Well, hey, I've been getting some of those tech checkup requests, so keep them coming. We found a few little quirks on some people's sites, and I think we've made improvements.
And maybe next week we might be ready to let some beta testers, which have already submitted. It's too late to get on the beta.
Yeah.
But we may let some beta testers loose with the new stats. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, we're just about to go through one more round of internal testing.
Yep.
So it'll be fun. Right.
Yes, it will. So again, everybody, thanks. We'll see you next time here on Podcast Insider. Stay safe. We'll be back with you next Thursday for another edition. Make sure you follow or subscribe. Tell your friends about the show. And if we got a topic you want us to cover, let us know. Everyone, thanks. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Have a good week.